5 years with Diderio, I've just enjoyed their values. They support artists and people who value art and creativity, and I think that aligns with what I want for my guitar journey.
This content's free, our work isn't. So help us out and like and subscribe, right guys?
Right. Yeah.
Let's go. Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar. We're hanging out in Marathon Music Works in Nashville, Tennessee. And I got my good buddy Deck. How you doing, sir?
Good, how are you?
Real good, man. Last time we talked to you, we were at Brooklyn Bowl, coming to the States in support of Comfort to Me.
Yeah.
And now you're here with Cartoon Darkness, which I'm gonna put a little editorially, personalization of it, is that was one of my favorite records last year.
Oh, thank you very much.
So kudos to that.
Thank you.
Now, tell me how that was different than the previous record in terms of how you guys approached it, what you guys did recording-wise, maybe some tones, just the apples and oranges to the two different records.
Yeah, it was almost like completely different. Comfort to Me was something that we put together during COVID. Mm. So like lockdown and everyone was isolated. We weren't really socializing. We were witnessing the whole world, I guess, through the news.
Yeah.
Rather than being out in the world and like testing songs on the road. So that was kind of an interesting sort of isolated sort of project.
Yeah.
And then Cartoon Darkness was sort of the first time that we had the luxury of timing and demos and stuff like that. It was sort of about a 4 month project where we demoed twice and then recorded at the Foo Fighters studio in the Valley.
How did that come about, you're being able to do that?
Oh yeah, I guess like through playing with them, we've got, you know, a mates rates off of them, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, we thought it would be cool to do it in LA, sort of do it the opposite of what Comfort to Me was, where we were forced to do it in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the middle of winter when we did that, and then we were in summer in LA, and you know, I was able to roam the world again, so yeah. It's like they're almost completely different.
Yeah.
In the approach.
Now, do you have a different appreciation for either one? I'm taking kind of the climate around the record and what everyone was experiencing, but like just the approach to the two different ways.
Yeah, I think like, you know, maybe it's like our attention spans or something, but we wouldn't ever want to repeat anything, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to do something different every time. It was never like the idea that we'd do, you know, the first album was done in Sheffield in England, second album in Melbourne, third one in LA, so like
fourth one could be Nashville.
Yeah, fourth one could be in Nashville, we'll see. Or maybe we could do the first album on Mars, we'll see.
Do you guys approach writing songs and demoing stuff, is that, do you road test them? Do you put the songs out and try them out on live?
We used to, but this sort of run, I don't know, I feel like we didn't feel comfortable maybe, or it was just good to have them up our sleeves, or
yeah.
We felt excited enough about them that we didn't want to tease them, I don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't really road test these. Or like even like maybe we're at the scale now where people are expecting to see a certain set, so
yeah.
It's scary putting a new song in.
What was your experience working with Nick as a producer?
Yeah, Nick was cool. He's got a engineering background, so he knows how to twist like every single knob in a studio, so he was just there like a madman sort of twisting all these knobs on that vintage Neve console from,
okay,
was it Sound City Studio?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
whatever? Yeah. So yeah, that was cool. And just kind of, yeah, just sort of tried to morph us into something maybe a little bit more dancey, I guess.
Uh-huh.
As you can see with like You Should Not Be Doing That and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Dude, that's one thing I love about the record, you know, is I got into the band because like songs like Security and Hurts,
yeah.
But seeing where you took Cartoon Darkness is where I really fell for the versatility that you guys have as a band. It's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Cool to see the different, like Big Dreams is not a song I saw coming.
Yeah.
But it was a song I needed in a way from
yeah.
Animal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Big Dreams, I wrote that sort of part back in 2021, I think. So like just as Comfort to Me was coming out. And so songs like that I never knew what their space was in Amelin, the Sniffers.
Yeah.
And I would share them with Amy, and she was super encouraging. She was like, no, there's a place for this. And I'm like, I don't know how. But, you know, sort of what I was talking about before was the difference in approach with Comfort to Me and Cartoon Darkness. With Comfort to Me, because of lockdown, we wrote that in a storage unit. And it was just, like, so noisy. Like, it was terrible. So, like, no one could really understand what anyone else was doing. A song like Big Dreams just would have become a mess and forgotten.
Yeah.
With Cartoon Darkness, the way that we wrote it was the three of us boys would go into the studio in the afternoon and demo instrumentals, and then Amy would come in the evening and do all of her vocals over the top. And that way it saved us having to play the songs over and over for Amy to figure out her lyrics.
Yeah.
And Amy could save her voice by not competing with our instruments.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of how, yeah, we got these more melodic and softer ideas out of the album.
And I think even your solos, obviously, as you play, you're going to get better and, you know, more well-equipped as a musician, but your solos are a lot more adventurous. You know what I mean? Like, you're going for it in different ways, different angles.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think, like, it's funny because soloing is probably my favorite thing to do.
Oh, is it really?
But it's sort of like the thing that I consider last, and I don't really ever like... It's very rare that I would like write a solo. Usually pretty much every solo on the album is just like improvised, and I don't know how to play any of them off.
Yeah, we couldn't ask you to tab it out or anything.
No, yeah. There was one time on the first album I was doing solos, and Ross, our producer, he was like, that was great, do that again. I was like, I can't, I don't know what I did. I don't know what I'm...
Just gonna black out.
Yeah, when I'm soloing, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm just going.
Like, because it's like a song that I love off that when it comes to the solo, because it reminds me so much of what the Stooges did so well, was like it's aggression, but then there's like feedback is chewing gum.
Oh, yeah? Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just the way that your guitar kind of comes into the rhythm section and then goes out, and it kind of is like on the highway next to it,
yeah,
and it
yeah,
comes
yeah.
back in, and yeah. it's so powerful. Yeah. But there's a lot of parts of that song where you're not really even playing notes. You're almost harnessing them, or at least yeah, that's what it
yeah.
sounds like.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you're just getting the feedback.
Yeah, love the feedback.
Yeah, no, is that something you were able, obviously, to do in a live take, or was that kind of overdubs?
That's an interesting one, because the solo for Chewing Gum is actually from a demo version that we
okay.
did. Yeah, so it was before we even got into the studio. And, you know, I guess this is where the secrets come in.
Yeah, to let them out.
I had this idea that I wanted the guitar to sound like this harmonica solo.
Oh, yeah.
In this song by a band called Catfish. What was the song? Jericho Road.
Okay.
And it's got this clipping harmonica, and I was like, well, I want to replicate that. So me and Nick, when we were in Melbourne, we sort of came up with this idea. It's, you know, the secret weapon is a graphic EQ into a Neve and just clip at different frequencies. And
yeah.
Yeah, and I think I was using like a Def Bi-Audio harmonic transformer as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, those things are pretty gnarly.
Yeah. We didn't have any of the gear that we had in the Melbourne studio in LA. So I was like to Nick, I was like, can you find a way to get the Melbourne demo solo? Luckily, we didn't change key. We might have changed tempo, but Nick, you know, you can mess around with that
yeah.
shit.
No, I know this jumps out of order, but I want to, because it's fresh in our mind, we're talking about is like, how are you going about getting that tone, ballpark it for a show?
Yeah, I just go for as much gain as possible, really.
Okay.
Yeah, that I can get. So.
So what do we got to do that?
So, kind of, I guess like, I always feel like the best way is to work backwards in terms of gain, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. So like I get, you know, these are both dialed into like a rock tone.
Yeah.
You know? That has a distortion pedal that we'll get into going into the high watt just to beef it up a bit.
Okay.
And then we've got this Schaefer replica, which is like the AC/DC pedal.
Yeah. I mean, I wore the shirt completely yeah. because you
yeah,
know.
I got the, where is it?
AC/DC. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's how you were able to leave the country, is because you're like, yep, you're an AC/DC fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Bon voyage.
Yeah, see you later. So yeah, I've got that. That's kind of like, it really doesn't change much in terms of gain. It just kind of thickens it, compresses it a bit.
But you're a believer because there's people that's a, I don't want to say it's a Klon-type pedal in terms of people's feelings towards it, but there's definitely a division of like,
yeah,
ah, it's all magic and bullshit.
Yeah.
And some people, as yourself, you have it on your board, and a guy named Angus is using, you know, the old wireless one, so
yeah,
there's something to it.
Yeah, it's like, it's very subtle, and, you know, you could say it's like a feel thing, because it's sort of not something that you would, I guess, it's something that you sort of perceive after the initial attack of the note, uh-huh. You know, so it's more of a sustained thing. So
got it.
I guess sustain is more of a feel thing. So it changes the way it feels to play the guitar rather than the way it sounds.
Sounds, yeah. Got it.
Yeah. And then in front of that for leads, I've got the Soul Food, which is like a generic, I guess, clone.
Yeah, real cheap one.
Yeah, real cheap one, which is great for someone who likes to kick these things around. And that has LED, it has a light emitting diodes in it instead of the germanium ones.
Oh, did you do that?
Yeah, well, I got a guy, his name's Dick Straight, that's his name in Melbourne. I think I mentioned him in the last
really?
One, maybe. I don't know.
He's worth mentioning again because of that name.
Yeah, Dick Straight in Melbourne. Big tone guy. he fixes everything, guitar pedals and turntables and all that.
Oh, okay. So,
but yeah, we got the LEDs in there, and that just gives me more headroom and a different gain.
Can we hear real quick? I know again,
sure.
We haven't really talked about guitar, but let's start with just the amps,
mm-hmm.
And then we can kick on the rest of it.
So,
and your two amps.
Oh, I got the wire on still.
So you got both amps, and you said off camera, just so people know, is that these are running all time?
Yeah. So these are both, the same signal's going to both of these.
Okay.
So this is just like the amps. Like that. And then this is with the Schaefer replica and the, I can turn this delay off, that's on all the time. It's like, that's kind of, you know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
That's like a, like an AC/DC feedback, you know?
Yeah.
So like if I do that without, it's like, it still feeds back, but but I swear to God, you know, it's got a blue LED on it anyway, I like that.
The way it made my ear tingle with the Schaefer was like, it is a different frequency.
Yeah,
so I can
exactly.
Speak to that.
Yeah, it's like, when you listen to those like old AC/DC, like the 70s, I love the bootlegs of AC/DC.
Yeah.
And you hear like his feedback, it's just like, let's see if we can. Like, that's nice, you know? Like, a slow feedback is so much more pleasant than just, like, instant, like... Then this is with the Soul Food on, so... You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's...
Ah, well, it's hard, but like you got to work for it, which I enjoy as well.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing too, is like you always ask people, I've done these so many times, but one of the person I asked that he uses it in a creative way is Kim Thale from Soundgarden.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, sometimes before sound, or during soundcheck, or after everyone leaves, he's like trying to find the spot in the stage
that
works with his boogie.
Yeah.
So then when it comes showtime, he kind of knows already where to hit the stage.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's such a thing, and like you said, it can be a guessing game a lot of times.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
But let's go back to the guitars. You, mm-hmm. Last time you came in, you've gotten two fresh friends. You had this and a matching V, right?
Yeah. The Flying V was like absolutely fresh. I think I had like a broken knob on it and everything. I had never used it. But the V only came out when I had like special guests.
Okay.
On the, and I just, I don't know. The V, it's great. It's fun. I felt cool. Everyone who doesn't play guitar is like, that's a cool guitar.
It is.
Which is fun. But I can't really justify just bringing it out for that. So so I got another Explorer. Where is it? There it is.
Okay.
But yeah, when last time, this was about 3 or 4 months old.
Yeah, it so definitely doesn't about, have the wear that it has now.
Yeah, this is like, was, yeah, I guess you'll get some close-ups on it. But
yeah.
I'm really proud of this in 300 gigs.
Yeah.
I guess, like, because Gibson loaned it to me, I'll give it back.
at some point.
Yeah, because they loaned it to me and it sort of had no, I don't know. I mean, it's valuable to me now, but I was like, oh yeah, you know, like, it's a free guitar, I'll kick it about.
Now, an Explorer shape and Explorer style, is still a very bold guitar. So it's like, yeah. I know that you're like, hey, I can't do the V, that's too much. But this is a statement too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people love it. And I think, like, you know, the people who play Explorers have sort of, you know, generated an image for themselves. So, you know, I'm definitely not trying to do that. But if that does happen, I'll definitely be grateful if I get associated with a certain guitar. I think that's like,
yeah,
the nicest compliment for a
now,
guitarist.
For guitar, Cartoon Darkness. Yeah. Was this one getting recorded?
Yeah. This one had a P90 in it. I had like the Lola.
Lola.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They do like a humbucker size P90. So I was using that. This got used on like every song.
Okay.
I had flat lounge on it for the album.
Really?
Yeah.
What made you go there?
Matt Sweeney from from Guitar Moves. He took me to an isolated beach in Malibu, and we were looking out in the ocean, and he told me about how like all the 60s records were flat wound strings.
Yeah, because they didn't really have the rounds yet.
Yeah.
Weren't as much a thing.
So he was like, you should try it. And then, so when we were writing the album, I tried the flat wounds, and because they don't have like the grip on them, like it doesn't sort of fatigue your fingertips. So I ended up being able to play for, you know, hours and hours and hours without even like getting any like sort of soreness on the end of my fingers. And because they have like a thicker string going through, they're harder to bend and manipulate. So I kind of felt like I was a bit more calculated with what I was doing.
Huh.
Yeah. Like I guess like Cartoon, Comfort to Me and the first album was kind of just like gain and go and improvise, whereas Cartoon Darkness was more like calculate and caricature. I don't know.
Yeah. No. Did you feel that the flats added to the tone, or what do you feel like it was just more about being calculated in how you played?
Yeah, I think the flats change the instrument from, I think like when they're round wound, they're sort of like an instrument that can be the lead and focal point of the music. Whereas when it's round, it's so hard to get into those harmonic frequencies that stand out to people that it sort of sits within the music better.
Mm.
And it's sort of a little bit maybe easier to mix with vocals. And then if I was gonna overdub, you could overdub with round wounds and it would just sit on top.
Yeah.
A lot better.
Why not use them live?
Live, I do.
Oh, okay.
Live, they're on the telly. Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah.
Now, I imagine that's probably for something a little bit more clean.
Yeah.
Serene.
This is for Big Dreams.
Okay.
We had to work hard to get the Big Dreams tone.
What did you use in the record, recording?
On the record was a Trini Lopez.
Okay.
Yeah, for the intro.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's sort of the studio stuff, so.
Yeah.
The intro is a Trini Lopez, which was just already in the studio, probably belonged to Dave, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll say that just for the.
Just cause.
Yeah. And, is that how you say it, Trini? I don't know.
Yeah, no, Trini.
Yeah. And then I think it would have been this with flat wounds and a P90.
So yeah. The record was pretty heavy P90.
Very, yeah. It was like P90s and flat wounds the whole way through, which like, if you told me like 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago, I would be like, no, that you should put that guitarist down.
Put him out of his misery.
Yeah. Why would you do P90s? But yeah, I sort of wanted a challenge as well.
So you went back to
Yeah, for live, it's like back. This is a Seymour Duncan Saturday Night Special.
Okay.
And it's the same on the other Explorer too.
Okay. And then I imagine the neck is stock from
Yeah. Burst Bucker or whatever.
Do you ever use the neck position?
Yeah, I use neck on Knifey. So
okay.
Knifey's like a. Like that. Yeah.
Killer.
Yeah, and then just. So it's like, you know, when I saw the AC/DC rig run down and I saw that Angus was like riding the volume, I was like, well, I have to do that too. Yeah, so got all into that after
it's,
that.
It's always trips me out, and that one gets called out probably the most is the AC/DC one.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but it's always cool to hear that guitar players of yourself that we like to get on this show
yeah.
actually watch it.
Yeah.
It's a trip. But man, I got to know about, you had a quote in a magazine, I'll even give him credit, Guitar World. You had used a name reference of Jurassic Park and Thin Lizzy. That's what you were trying to go for in some sort of song reference.
Jurassic Park?
Yeah, Jurassic Park. Even though I know that's a nod to one of your old bands, right?
Jurassic Nark. Yeah. Pig's solo was like a nod to Thunder and Lightning era, yeah. Thin Lizzy. Yeah. As a John Sykes.
What's your favorite song on the record? Like, what are you most proud of?
On Cartoon Darkness?
Yeah. For yourself, selfishly, not as the band.
Selfishly, yeah, maybe.
But your work, what you contribute.
I guess maybe Chewing Gum. Yeah, Chewing Gum, I was trying to come up with like the most evil sounding riff I could, sinister.
Can we hear it?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
It's one of my faves.
Yeah.
Dude, that's riffs.
Yeah, and I showed, me and Amy had been at the pub together. We had like a band meeting, and then at that time, we were doing a lot of writing. So I was like, Amy, check out this riff I've got. And she was like, oh, I really like that. And yeah, I mean, the lyrics that's what's fun about like, a bit, I guess, collaborating as an artist is that the lyrics don't have a sinister theme, you know what I mean?
No.
It's almost like a love song.
I was gonna say, it's almost like a love song.
Chewing gum
stuck on you.
Yeah. Like, which is hilarious. Yeah, because here I was trying to be evil almost, yeah. You know?
Speaking of evil, you're kind enough to message me back and forth at times, and you'd mentioned that Melvins inspired a song on the new record.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, well, Doing It In Me Head,
yeah.
It was originally like a drop D, like I was trying to do like, the cover of Going Blind, so it was like, and then I think it was originally something like, shit like that, yeah.
Yeah, I just got to see the Melvins a couple weeks ago.
And awesome.
He was awesome. Buzz is, they play about as many shows as you guys a year. And
yeah.
He's still such a treat to see live.
That's awesome.
He's a force of nature for sure.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, what should we know about tuning typically for this guy? I know you probably switch during songs or different songs throughout the set, but what tunings are we in?
This is half step down.
Okay.
Yeah. There's on the album, it's mine is like drop G sharp.
Okay.
So the low string is tuned to an octave down of the second or A string, or what does people call it, the fifth string, I think.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, we have the Telly now. Tell me about how the Telly Deluxe became part of the family.
Yeah, so we have Big Dreams, which is like the softest Amor song we've ever done, I guess.
Yeah.
And so it didn't matter like how much I was turning down the Explorer, turning off gain, it just was still like so hot and just not doing Big Dreams, I guess, the way that it should be done.
Yeah.
So... yeah, we tried to figure out what would be best, and I love Tellys. I sort of fell in love with Telecasters in this album cycle.
Okay.
So I was like, you know, there's a great guitarist called Mick Green. He played in the Pirates.
Okay, not familiar.
Yeah. They're sick. You should definitely check him out. And he's like this shredding 70s Telecaster player, and he was a big influence on Wilco Johnson from Dr. Feelgood as well. So. I was like, well, I want to be a Telly guy, so... And Keith Richards, too.
Yeah, that's kind of the bar, especially when it comes to the humbuckers in the neck. Now, why not anything else? Because obviously you mentioned the Trini Lopez, or I'm sure you get like a 335 style guitar, but...
I think something as delicate as a semi-hollow or hollow guitar would just not last long with us.
Now, I saw you do like some random video, I think, for setlist.fm, and you mentioned Juan Waters... as a guy in Kansas that you'd mentioned helped contribute to your stage, like, presence, we'll say.
Yeah.
Is that like you fake throw the guitar because they'd get a rise out of the crowd. Have you ever actually thrown the guitar?
I've never, I've probably thrown a guitar. I've never actually thrown it though. We were in New Zealand recently and my best mate, I passed him the guitar. He played, he supported us and I I passed him the guitar to do the throw.
Yeah.
As I was walking on stage, and I was like, shit, I better just turn around, make sure he doesn't actually throw it, because he would do something cheeky like that. But I got him to do the fake throw. But I love doing the fake throw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently I scare people, but whenever I'm looking at people, they're always smiling. I'm always like, you got to be scared. I want you to be scared. You're going to freak you out. Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that. So can we hear a little bit of Big Dreams?
Yeah,
sure. Give this thing a little love.
Tuny, but I like it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's the last day of tour, so.
Yeah. Maybe I'll actually throw it tonight.
There you go, instead of being faking. Now, I saw in the liner notes, Steve McBean got a shout out for helping with a ladder. He got thank-you'd in your guys' Cartoon Darkness for providing a ladder.
Right.
Because I'm thinking, like, on the cover art, it looks like someone's.
Oh, right. Yeah. There you go. There you go. Yeah, John. John, who shot the cover, he was standing on a ladder when we took that photo, so I guess that's where they...
Yeah. Well, I bring that up because it looks like you guys always have so much fun, whether it's the cover art for that record,
yeah,
and then your music videos.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's Big Dreams or you should not be doing that. Like,
yeah.
What do you guys do when it comes to approaching music videos?
That's John from PHC, who, he travels on the road with us and does our photography and does our music videos, and he's also done some behind the scenes stuff for us as well. We kind of got in touch with him through King Gizzard and that Melbourne music scene, and so he's a long-term collaborator with us now. Yeah. I guess, which is a crazy thing to say.
Yeah, I bet.
And I guess he understands what the concepts of the songs are, and he's just great, shoots out ideas real quickly, and we trust him that we'll, you know, that he'll get it right.
Yeah, because, like, Big Dreams is just you guys riding on motorcycles.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It was like, when he was like, that's what we were going to do, I was like, that's easy.
Yeah.
Compared to what he's made us do in other videos.
Yeah. Now, let's maybe go back to the Explorer, and we can explore. We'll explore the pedal board a little bit
yeah,
more.
Yeah. Because that's the fun part.
As we do that, talk to me about how you landed on these two amps, too.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Obviously, you were using Marshall last time.
Yeah, it's... And then since then, I started using a Hi-Watt that was in the Foo Fighters studio.
Okay.
Just because, like, I guess, like, a lot of our riffs... when Gus writes the riffs... kind of like Hertz or something, and they're like very single note punchy sort of riffs,
mm-hmm.
that I felt like you need to push air a bit more with a riff, like, and then I mean it might be difficult to pick up with the mic, but if you hear, like, the way that this sort of, you know what? Turn that off a bit.
Loosen a bit.
Compared to, like, the way that this sort of is, like, it's like sweet, but it's like kind of like all, maybe it's like too compressed or something. You know? That was funny. But it's so, like, that's kind of like where the Hi-Watt came from, is that, like, when I had, like, I just kind of wanted to punch air a bit more. Yeah.
And do you ever mess around with a Park, I heard?
Yeah, I have a Park. It's over there. Bryce uses it as a drink stand at the moment. I was using that for a while. I really enjoy it. But I think I'm going to try and get it, like, hot rodded and get a little bit more gain out of it or something. Yeah.
Now, did Dick Strait fix your line splitters, your signal splitters? Because I remember we had messaged before and you're like, yeah, because you had a sticker on the first rig.
Yeah. Pretty funny. Touch my bike. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is set up by Dave Friedman, funnily enough.
Oh, cool.
Which is, like, you know, way below his qualifications.
Yeah. And he does big, build some big rigs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I was like, can you make me a six-pedal thing?
Board.
Yeah. And I still don't know how this thing works, but yeah. Yeah, I think I annoy him, but...
One of these days you're going to have a Friedman, I feel like.
I should.
Yeah.
I should. But yeah, yeah, he set this up and it's kind of just what I get, the tones for the album. This is new as well. I got bored.
Really?
So I just got to... I like this too, how it's...
A little squeak?
Yeah.
Why'd you land on the Vox of all the walls that are out there?
It said hand wide, so I was like, I like hand wide. So
it's got to be better.
Yeah, it's got to be better if it's hand wide. I'm not sure if it is, but I've used a Jimi Hendrix wah as well in the past. But yeah, I just... what I look for in touring gear is like something that if it just collapses, like I can pick it up in like anywhere in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, Vox, accessible. Crybaby, accessible. I'll use whatever. But yeah, I just got bored, so I was like, bring the wire into it, and sometimes...
Are you going overboard?
Nah.
Like a certain guitarist in Metallica? Often nah, accused of?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I'll get to like the last song, and then I pull out the wire, and I'm like...
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I you know, if it's something new, you know, for the listener.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I try and do like Wawa Watson stuff. Sometimes I'm trying to do Kirk Hammett stuff. Yeah. But.
Well, I know we kind of touched on it, but let's properly go through the pedal board here. You got.
The tuner, the most important.
Yeah.
I recommend every musician, every guitarist gets one. I got the.
I mean, if you want to be a pro.
Yeah, if you want to be a pro, exactly. I fought against them for years, but yeah. And then, so signal-wise, it goes into the Vox first, then into the tuner, into the soul food.
Okay.
Then
soul food on all the time?
Yeah, yeah. So that, well, they're all on all the time, and then this is just like in and out of loop.
Got it.
Yeah, so main, being my main tone that I use the most often is the Schaefer. With this carbon copy, that's kind of, I've tried to just get like a little reverb sort of.
Yeah, because all the knobs are pretty low.
Yeah, exactly. So like,
just
gonna notice it. Yeah, yeah. Using in-ear monitors, I can hear it, and that's, you know, similar to what I was saying before. It's like the feel, rather than this, it changes the sound.
Were
you know?
Using the in-ear monitors last time when we came through?
I think I would have just started using them then, yeah.
Do you enjoy them?
I do, yeah.
Being under the microscope?
Yeah, it used to like, it freaked me right out. And when I used to make a mistake, I used to think like, oh, that was like, you get, instead of like, the mistake is like right there. And then I would like look at my bandmates and I'm like, did they just get the mistake right in their ears too? That must be really annoying. I'm like, am I putting them off? I'm putting myself off. And then next thing it's like, oh shit, it's a chorus. So, but now it's like, it's great. Like dial it in, get the EQs going, you know, I don't like this frequency, take that out.
And yeah.
Yeah, I like, it was interesting for me when I sort of figured out that I was, if I guess like your whole sort of career leading into that, it's like earplugs. And maybe not hearing yourself that well.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of like sold this idea under in-ear monitors. It's like, oh, you can hear yourself way better. But then like, it's a new concept. And so I've realized that I don't really actually like hearing myself. So I get like a little bit of myself, but mostly I'm trying to listen to the other band members.
Yeah, and I'm sure you get a little bleed, you know, these are piping hot.
I mean,
it's great. I love rock.
So.
Yeah. Now, I want to go back to a comment you said where you're kind of like, because it fascinates me by someone that we all come and pay to see, but you get into your own headspace where you're like, oh, I just made a mistake. How do you steer clear of that, where you try not to dwell too long in a song or a moment?
Yeah, I mean, Big Dreams is the worst one for that, where it's just me softly doing that intro, and I'll make a mistake, and I go, fuck. Yeah, oh, sorry, I can't say that, but...
Oh, sure
you can. Yeah. And, it's terrible, but, I mean, I don't even know if it's, like, a rehearsal thing, because it's a completely different experience when you play in front of people with adrenaline and...
Yeah.
you know, and distractions and all that sort of stuff and technical difficulties. When you're in rehearsal, it's just like a luxury, you know what I mean? So I think, it's sort of like a meditative thing that you need to get into. It's like, yeah, whatever, I'm zen.
Yeah.
I meant to make the mistake. Sometimes when I'm like really switched on during a tour, if I make a mistake, I do enough to acknowledge that what I did and I repeat it. So I'll do it again to be like, no, I meant to do that.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Double down on it.
Yeah. No, this is how it goes now. Yeah.
Now, you had mentioned before, there's a pedal that hits the high watt. Is that?
Yeah. It's a Daredevil drive-by.
Oh, Johnny's great.
Yeah.
Johnny
yeah,
Water,
he's great. Yeah. And that, it used to be here, but then we sort of figured it was too much distortion when we were using the park. It was great for the high watt, but bad for the park. The park didn't need it.
Okay.
So then, and then at the beginning of this tour, we had just one of the Keeley, I think, compressors into the high watt, but then we wanted more gain, so then we put the drive-by in. The drive-by just goes to the high watt.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that like hitting it in front of it?
Yeah. I'll go turn it off. Okay. I'll show you what it, or maybe Dennis. You reckon you could do that? We'll just A-B it.
Yeah. And then what are you using the microphalanger for?
So that's for the intro of Jerkin.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's not a flanger on the record, but it does it perfectly. On the record, it's just a high pass and a low pass.
Oh, really?
Just being mixed.
Yeah.
Whatever. Nick Launay did that. And then I was like, well, how am I going to do that live? And the flanger kind of does it perfectly. Yeah. Is that off? Yeah, we'll do off. So this is just what the high watt is dialed, how that is. I'll turn this off too. Not necessarily clean, but not necessarily dirty.
No,
and then,
just a lot of volume.
Yeah. That's with the drive-by. Yeah.
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 It wakes it up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And then when... Get there. Oh, we'll get there. Yeah.
Can so we hear the oh, sorry. I was going to say, can we hear the flanger?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I use it as well on Me and the Girls, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can swing and miss on another question based on something else I read. You mentioned that you'd like to think of trying to do both Malcolm and Angus.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate?
So, if you like isolate Malcolm Young and Angus, Malcolm's cleaner, like kind of like deceptively cleaner than what you would think for AC/DC.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what I'm trying to do with the high watt sort of thing is. I mean, with the drive-by, they're kind of on equal gain levels now. But, I mean, I don't know if... Fucking... Oh, shit. Versus, like, we'll see. Hopefully they sound...
We'll find out.
I mean, that's got more gain now, but yeah. And then, so then together, to us standing here, we probably wouldn't realize, but once it goes through the front of house and one gets panned hard the other way, the other gets panned hard the other way,
that you
kind of, it gets a bit more of the full two guys in one thing. Yeah,
the whole AC/DC package.
Yeah. So like, they'll both sustain differently, which is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on where you're standing, where you're leaning.
Yeah.
Now, another non-question that has to come up in a gear interview is, how the hell does a guy from Australia become a major baseball fan? Because I don't know anything about Australian sports culture, I think of rugby, football, or as we like to call it in America, soccer.
Yeah.
But...
I love cricket.
Okay.
Cricket's big,
not big
in Australia.
Here. Not
yeah,
big.
Not big, but they're both, you know, games that take a lot of patience to get into.
Oh, yeah.
And we got over to LA last year for the album, well, I guess like in March, and Shohei Ohtani joined the Dodgers at the same time. So he was just like all over the news. And, you know, I was just going, I would go to baseball games all on tour all the time, just like to kill a day.
Yeah, because
like,
they're day games.
Yeah, yeah. And it would just scratch the cricket itch, you know, like I wouldn't exactly know what was going on, but like I could appreciate it in the same way that I can appreciate cricket. So then when I was in LA for last year, and then Shohei was there, and then they won the World Series, I got hooked.
Yeah.
And I ended up going like 10 games. I was, you know, in Eagle Rock for most of last year, so I was like 15 minute Uber from the stadium.
Damn.
Go by myself, go with friends, and just like, oh, and I love the peanuts. The peanuts is how I got into baseball. That's what it really is. Yeah, peanuts.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's not really a thing in Australia.
Really?
Yeah. And like I got like hooked on them, and I had like three big bags at home. If I was watching the baseball at home, I was eating them.
Do you throw the shells at on the floor at your
house? Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
There's American restaurants. I don't know if you've frequented yet since your travels and being here. Is that there's a couple restaurant chains that allow you as like an advertiser.
It like polishes the floor or whatever.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, they'll have bring them to your table as you sit down, and then you just like encourage to shell them right on the floor.
I love it. I love it.
I do too, man. It seems like your fascination and love with baseball is kind of like how I got into hockey.
Yeah, cool.
I kind of knew like, well, the puck goes in the net, and that's good.
Yeah.
So let's start there.
Yeah.
And then because Nashville has the Predators, I've gotten into it now the last 10, 11 years. It's like, yeah. I've become a fan.
Yeah. I've been to two hockey games. I've never seen a fight, and I've never been able to follow the puck. So I've had fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, ice hockey is probably a little bit harder for an Australian to get into. You know, we don't have a lot of
ice out there. No, not at all.
Yeah.
Well, Deck, I really appreciate your time and let me spitball questions about gear and not about gear, because it's a lot of fun to chat with you.
Thank you very much.
Congrats on the record again, man. I love
Cheers.
It. And we're going to talk to Gus.
Yeah, have fun.
Strings have a lot to do with your tone. The NYXLs for me have always tonally been great.
I really need that friction to feel my slides. I depend on that friction even for accuracy.
Now we're joined yet again by Deck, but by bass player Gus. Gus, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How you doing?
Real good, man. Like I said, this is the first time I've met a Tasmanian devil.
That's it.
Dude.
That's me, baby.
Deck has joined us because you are a self-proclaimed gear nut. You know everything there is to know, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just here to teach him a few things. Yeah, he's just sitting in.
No, but really, what is Deck help, you know, steer you in certain ways? I know that you have a few pedals here, but, is it a brotherhood of tone?
Big time. Deck is a big part of the tone. Also, our sound engineer, Lawrence, just off camera here.
Yeah.
You know, I let the boys kind of... you know, bounce off each other.
Tell you what to do?
Out. Yeah, pretty much. Keep it easy for everybody.
Well, tell me about the bass here. This one looks to not have the tuning keys wrapped up like this one over here.
It does not. This is a Fender P bass. Fucking, yep, thank you. Yep.
You've bassed it so far?
Yep. What, I wanna say this is like 2024. It's either 2023, 2024.
Okay.
It's got black pickups, it's got a black pick guard, four strings, as you can see, they're made out of metal, these things, tuning knobs, pegs, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
This is a strap, so you know.
How long have you had
these knobs,
strap?
Two knobs here.
How long have you had the strap? Longer than the bass?
Far longer than the bass. I was just saying, maybe pre-COVID. I think I've had this strap since 2019.
It's a good friend.
It's seen some things.
Yeah.
It's seen, if the strap could talk.
Yeah. Now, why P over a J?
It looks way cooler.
Does
that it? Was kind of initially, because I'm like, you know, I was just like, it looks cooler. I'm like, I don't fucking know. I don't know about the sound and that. Pure, initially,
like
it was
like,
pure aesthetics, but he was also you know, pointed in the right direction by Declan, as with everything.
We don't play jazz.
Wise.
We play, you know.
We play precision.
We play precision.
Yeah, we play precision music, not jazz.
I was going to say punk, but whatever. P stands for punk with us.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Punk bass.
Fig Jam. I saw that in your guitar strap. Can you explain it to me? I'll throw a photo right here in the edit.
Yeah.
Your guitar strap that was, you know, rattlesnake. We'll say snakeskin.
Snakeskin.
Yeah. But what's Fig Jam mean?
Fig Jam is when you do something right. As an Aussie, you say fig jam, and it means fuck, I'm good, just ask me.
And you said that was something your dad would use quite.
Yeah, my dad would do that when he was measuring lengths of timber.
Do you say fig jam when it comes to Gus's tone?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Jam, and anything else in life.
Jam, Jello, that's your guy.
No, Gus, if I read an interview you did once, you're a milk guy.
I'm a milk guy.
Now, have you been able to enjoy the delicacies of American milk? American cow milk?
I've fired up a few. The range isn't as kind of extensive as it is in Australia.
I saw that.
It's all the shit, like on my page where I review.
Yeah.
Out of Milkmate.
Yeah.
Just for the people out there. Put that up on the screen right now.
Got it.
Australia comes out with a new promo like every 3 months, but here it's kind of harder to find more unique flavors. Mm. Yeah.
So what's your favorite that you've
just experienced? My favorite, like, standard milk is banana milk.
Okay.
I fuck with that super hard.
Are these standalones, or are you eating it with cereal, or is it just like as a
beverage?
No,
I couldn't even tell you the last time I ate cereal, just straight beverage.
Okay. Man.
For me and Declan, we've been...
Are you a milk guy too?
He's a milk guy
too. I love
too.
Milk. I could drink like 2 liters of milk in one sitting.
And that's just plain.
That's just plain. I'm a plain milk.
Okay,
plain
so I got a question guy. For you. Growing up in my time frame, there is a certain, kind of like with like the fads that go on TikTok, but yeah. This is probably pre-internet maybe even.
Right.
Is it? But it was a thing that we did was, because we're bored and we weren't drinking yet, was drinking a gallon of milk in an hour or less.
True, I've seen videos of that.
Yeah, it can wreck you.
Fuck. Yeah, that's turbo.
Do you think you could handle it?
Fuck no.
I reckon I could do it. I'll do it.
Yeah, and like there's different levels because then you got the skim, which is kind of watered down and whatnot.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You get the whole milk, and the people that were real adventurous would go chocolate milk.
Oh. Yeah, that's turbo.
Yeah, yeah.
That coming out the other end. Couldn't look at that for a while.
I'm sorry, friend. It goes out both ends.
Yeah,
try that challenge.
Yeah. Too true.
I've seen it.
But let's steer back to gear. Seriously, though, what do you enjoy about, you know, playing bass in this band?
I mean,
Other than being a job, I can't play anything else.
I got a job. That's great. Well, I don't know. Like,
are they paying you?
Kind of. I fucking hope so. We're getting paid, right? I think it's just the simplicity of it. Like, 4 fucking strings, keep it easy. He's got fucking way more to do than I do. And it's also, you know, I can kind of like just turn around and face my amp if I want. But you know, nobody's looking at me for the most part.
But you steer a lot of the songs. Like on the new record, like you start off like, you should not be doing that.
It's true. Well, yeah.
There's times where you steer a lot.
I like to noodle. Yeah, I guess writing by myself can be, you know, really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And like, I also like, because, you know, all 3 of us write, me, Declan and Bryce, but just coming from 3 very different places, mm-hmm. things that makes it way more interesting and kind of distinct writing styles for each fucking different song we do.
I asked him, and so I'll give you the same question, is what was like a proud moment that you had on the record that you're like, oh, that was, you know, that was something I really look back on and was proud of that you accomplished or did or brought to the table idea wise.
I think I only got a couple of songs on the record, I think, because initially You Should Not Be Doing That wasn't going to get on there. But because initially I didn't even really care for the song that much.
It's a banger.
I had the fucking verse and the chorus and Declan was like, put it together. And then I was just like, oh, this song's fucking whatever. But then gradually, you know, you play it more, you have a different experience with it live, and I really enjoy it now.
Yeah.
And people fucking dig it, so that's always a plus.
It's a dancing number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's because of what you're playing, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was fucking, pulled that one out of my ass. No idea. I don't know how to, like, I don't go in with an approach to anything. I'm just like fucking noodle and just whatever happens.
Can you noodle for us for a little bit? Yeah, folks a little taste of what you got? So good.
Thank you. I do what I can.
Now, what are some of your favorite bass lines to play over? Like when, because you're coming from a guitar perspective and
yeah.
You got to dance all over what he does.
Yeah, for sure. That bass line is like easy for me. Like I felt like if I followed it too much, it would just get too distracting. Probably end up sounding too much like Primus or something. So I just play the root note, which is perfect.
Yeah.
Root note and a bit of feedback. Lovely. Yeah, and then, you know, then there's something like Hertz, which I'm like cursing that I followed. The reason I don't follow, you should not be doing that, is because I followed him in Hertz.
True.
And Hertz is, yeah, tough to play for me.
Anyway. See, look at you.
Yeah,
I'll get him.
Yeah. So yeah, that's where it gets easy. And you know, when Gus comes up with a bass line, you know, the technique is sort of choosing when to follow and make that the, you know, the emphasis of that melody, and when to sort of let it just sit and have Amy just do her thing over the top. Yeah. Too.
Now, when you come with an idea that's more guitar focused, or obviously it is guitar focused coming from you, but it starts with guitar, are you telling or instructing or kind of giving him what you're thinking bass wise, or are you late that open to Gus here?
Yeah, with like bailing on me, I had to come up with a bass line, I guess. Because I guess if I just came through with like the root notes, you know, it's probably not as exciting. So I try and, I guess like maybe bailing on me was a little bit too exciting.
Yeah, 99% of the songs that I don't write the bass line, well, I don't write, I'm just doing what I'm told by Declan or Bryce. They just fucking tell me what to do. Maybe I'll put some sauce in there. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, or like some things, like, you know, the chorus of Bailey on Me, I'd do a little fucking run that I did. But like 99% of the time, just do as I'm told.
You just want to stay under the radar.
You got to run in Big Dreams too, which is...
I got a little run in that.
Let's see that.
Fuck. What is it? We've been playing it faster now.
Yeah.
Something light.
Yeah. Now, okay, so did the P bass come to you just as much as the Ampeg, or what came first with that? Or were you always playing the P into the Ampeg, and that's kind of been what it is?
Would have started playing Ampeg when we started touring and we could fucking request what we wanted.
Hiring backline before,
you know, it's just gigs, whoever's got a fucking amp or whatever you bring to. Hiring backline would have been the first time. And is it SVT? Is that what it is? Or was?
Classic.
Like, yeah. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
SVT, all the lingo.
Yeah.
Play Fender, play Ampeg.
Buy Fender, buy Ampeg?
Yep, buy Fender, buy Ampeg.
Says Gus, the milk guy.
Yep, yeah. That's it. But so just would have been that. And straight away, Declan was like, SVT, that's what you want.
Yeah.
And then like, in terms of the bass, I don't know, when I was just kind of playing some of Bryce's basses when I first joined the band, because I didn't fucking have one at the time.
Bryce had like a Steinberg P bass copy.
And I was playing an SG bass for a while as well.
Yeah, I tried to fling it around my head once and I hit myself in the head with the horn.
Oh yeah, he did. In our living room, that was fucking brutal.
Yeah, that was the only time I've ever
horn
tried to
the
swing,
temple.
Swing
it's probably one and only.
Horn to the temple is fucking turbo.
But Gus can swing it. Gus has done it before.
I've done it on stage. I've tried it on stage twice. First time successfully.
Okay.
Second time, I didn't have the... these like little clip things on it, and it went fucking flying. There's a real funny photo of it. It looks good in the photo, but then the fucking thing, my tuning peg was just like fucking turned inside out.
Nose grind.
How did you get him in the band?
How did I get him in the band?
Yeah. How did you guys cross paths?
Yeah, so my old band, Jurassic Narc, played with his old band, Bus Money, down in Tasmania.
Names.
Yeah.
That's how we met.
He supported me. And
our crowd was bigger.
He supported me, and and then a week later he had his like first trip to Melbourne. I showed him how to be debaucherous. 2017 comes around, we're looking for a bass player. I called him, he was drunk at the pub, and he said yes.
I had to get the current bass player of my band at the time to learn the whole set in fucking an hour and then teach it to me, because Declan was like, listen to it. I was like, I don't know how to fucking do that.
Yeah.
And then I was on a plane in a couple of days.
Stephen Bradbury bass over here.
That's great.
You know Stephen Bradbury? The speed skater from Australia who he won the gold medal just by like hanging at the back. That's him.
To everyone else ate shit and just fucking cruised through.
It's just laying back.
Yeah, Stephen Bradbury bass. I'll take that.
That's pretty good.
Gold medal.
Gold medal, that's it.
So you're a gold medal bassist.
On podium, at least.
It's a one-man race.
Yeah. Now, what about pedals we got here? We covered the SVT. You got the P, punk bass.
Punk bass.
But what pedals and deck? How did you select these for him?
Yeah, well, no. So the bass overdrive, you had that way back in the day.
We got
a $50 one.
I bought
like
one super cheap years ago.
Okay.
But then it broke, and then I gave it to our manager to get fixed like 3 years later. It turns out it wasn't broken.
There you go. That was,
I just bought it because it was super cheap and Declan was like, that's a great deal. You should buy it.
Yeah.
And then just
made you pay kind for of, it?
Yeah, it was like $60 or something.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. There you go.
See, it was cheap as fuck.
He was rich back then.
Tuner pedal? It's pretty self-explanatory, I'd say.
Yeah.
Polytune.
When was the last time you used it?
Personally? It's been a minute.
Yeah. Lawrence, our front of house, he likes the bass overdrive, which had some other things in there. We had like a JHS Bonsai at one point.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which belonged to me and I asked for it back.
Okay.
And that's my distortion plus two. When we have like the softer songs, we don't use it anymore, but I don't know if you want to, what were you using on like Knifey or something?
Can we hear it?
And that was, I put that. That was originally where the what is it? The AC/DC pedal is on my.
Oh, the Schaefer.
Yeah. That was originally there. It had like, I got the LEDs in there.
What do you like about LED clip?
Headroom.
Okay.
Louder. Yeah.
The fuck is headroom?
there's not much here.
I don't have any.
Yeah. Same, brother. Same.
Enough of the ball jokes, Deck.
Yeah.
Let's carry on. No, I really appreciate that you guys seem to have fun with each other.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta.
Taking the piss out of each other.
Yeah. You gotta.
If it's not for fun, then what's you gotta do it for money. If there's no money, then you gotta do it for fun. We're not getting paid right now. We're having fun.
Yeah. It's the last day on tour, so I do really appreciate you guys hanging out, because I'm sure there's other things you'd want to be doing.
Nah, thanks for fucking having us.
Yeah, man.
It was pretty funny when he was like, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, fuck it, why not? And he's like, really? I'm like, why not?
Yeah, because, I mean, you got a lot of secrets and people are dying to know.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's funny, like, during the album cycle, I think I did an interview for, like, a bass magazine, like, the first time ever, some, like, German bass magazine, and I'm just like... Man, I gotta tell you, like, starting out, I got no fucking idea. I was on the phone to my manager before, and he's like, SVT, you play Fender P-Bass. But it's good. Thanks, Declan, for imparting your knowledge of my setup.
Yeah. There's three bass channels, too. We got the clean DI, comes after the tune. One. And then we have DI out of the Ampeg head as well, so that's like a dirty DI.
That means direct input.
Yeah. and then we have the amp signal as well, through the vintage MD421.
Now, how much are you hands-on when it comes to everything? Obviously, it seems like you're not just guitar land guy. You like to shape the sonics.
I just watch rig rundowns, so I have enough of an understanding of how things go.
Yeah. Get off his dick, man.
Big jam.
I that wasn't my idea, but I like it. I like, you know, when it comes to like our monitors, that you can ask for a clean DI, a dirty DI, or a bass mic. Sort of, you know, less or more or whatever, and we can color it ourselves. And it's, yeah, I guess it's like, it's just been interesting sort of taking it from small level stages and trying to make it, you know, when we play to an empty Fenway Park with Foo Fighters, you know, palatable.
Palatable, that's
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was a trip playing stadiums like that as you know, coming to the show here, you're headlining, everyone's gonna be here, can't wait to see you. But playing like under baseball stadium, yeah, people are kind of coming in still where it's daylight.
Yeah,
people like playing like before 5 p.m. Nobody's finished work. People are like, you know, it's like, it's humbling and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a different mindset you guys have, but you know, you just go in and kick ass.
Yeah,
we have fun with it.
We get the same performance, whether it's Fenway or the Tote. We'll give it the same thing. Yeah.
Now, what's on docket for the rest of the year for you guys?
We go to Europe next for summer.
Three and a half weeks.
Home
for a tiny bit. Europe for 3 weeks.
We got Glastonbury.
Glastonbury. fucking Leeds, Reading.
You're all over the place.
All over. Yeah. Never
Lots
stops.
Of milk to try.
That's it. That's it, brother.
Europe tour in November. Maybe some other stuff. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe some other stuff. Just
What's your
guys'
favorite spot in America to visit, tour-wise?
Mine's LA, but just because there's so many good friends there. It's kind of the best places is where the friends are.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like playing, you know, that's always a big fucking, it's a big show, it's a big party.
Yeah, I bet.
It's always a good time.
LA's good. I like Austin as well.
Okay.
New York was really fun. We just did Pier 17.
That was one of the most incredible venues ever played, ever. Really? The Brooklyn Bridge right behind us. You can see fucking Statue of Liberty from where I was standing on stage. Incredible.
We played in front of the boat that crashed into the bridge.
In Brooklyn Bridge, the boat was parked there.
It was parked behind us.
And it happened the day after.
Yeah.
It's crazy shit. And,
yeah, which was crazy.
You guys are a soundtrack to that.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way.
Yeah.
Well, again, I really appreciate you guys' time.
Thank you.
You go Tone Monsters, you know. Thanks for helping out Declan.
Do what I can. Yeah, exactly. You're welcome, Declan. Anytime you need anything, fella, I'm here.
It was Gus who told me to do two delays.
Yeah, he begged me before to kind of switch it around, switch our roles around.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you, guys. Till next time.
Thank you.